I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs. I play video games.
News and Rumors with your hosts, John DeLuna, XB,
X-Chicken,
Weebum.
Damn right I am.
And Rob.
Here we go!
News and Rumors.
Hey everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna. Welcome to New Soundwave for the week of 4-1. April Fools. We're recording on April Fool's Day, but no jokes because we record in the afternoon, and anybody who still makes April Fool's jokes like into the afternoon on April Fool's Day is an idiot.
Well, besides, you have to think too, there's no April Fool's joke that could happen today that would top what Cartoon Network did last night.
Okay, so what did they do real quickly for our video game viewers?
So starting half an hour into April 1st Eastern Time, they brought back Toonami.
Awesome.
Starting with Dragon Ball Z, Gundam Wing, and going all the way up through old Astro Boy and Gigantor at the end. They even pulled out an episode of Blue Sub 6.
That is so good. That is so good. So it was just like going in a time warp, essentially.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, some of the stuff they mixed in was old Adult Swim stuff. Probably just because it's what they could get.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool.
It was the first time in I don't know how many months I actually sat and watched Cartoon Network rather than just watching the shows they air through other channels, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm.
I think I do.
And I understand that somewhere in there, Tom reviewed Mass Effect 3.
Like 3 or 4 times, yeah.
Oh, no. Was it the same review over and over again? Or did he, like... Oh, okay.
Yeah, they... Eh. And they even dragged out one of the old Toonami promo deals. It was the one, like, heavily featuring Outlaw Star. They played that 3 or 4 times, too.
I think I know exactly which one you're talking about, too.
Oh, of course you do, because they aired it every other day when Toonami was actually on.
Yeah, for, like, 3 years, yes.
5 years. At least.
Oh, God. God.
And the other April Fool's joke I want to mention that I really enjoyed is Google Maps 8-bit version.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Kind of topical.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where there's this nice little tab marked quest and it's the entire world done over in Dragon Warrior 1 tiles. It's wonderful.
That's so fun. What's great is that probably took them like a long time to develop. And so they're sitting on an awesome April Fool's joke for like months and months.
The part I liked was the video explaining the use of it with the Nintendo cartridge prop they built. They had the switch and the modem and the guy blowing into it when it didn't work.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, well, so yeah, everybody, I hope you had a good April Fool's. Let's talk about endings. Let's talk about game narrative and storytelling. Speaking of Mass Effect 3, so guys, we've touched on this a little bit. So Mass Effect 3, the ending is so unpopular with gamers that the developer is actually going to go back and offer DLC that addresses the ending in some way. Now, they haven't said that it's going to be a rewrite of the ending. In fact, they've kind of said, we're not going to go that far. But they're going to do something to make the ending a little bit more satisfying to the people who have played the first three games. The thing about Mass Effect 3... that makes this so, I guess, more significant than other endings that have been unsatisfactory. It's that Mass Effect is a game that builds on one game to the next. So the decisions that you make in the first Mass Effect game will affect what happens in the second game. And then all of that affects what happens in the third game. And there are 16 endings in the third game that you could potentially get, and the one that you get is obviously dependent on your choices. Even weird stuff, like in the second game, there's side quests, that if you don't do them, it registers that as a choice that you made not to do them, and that affects the ending in Mass Effect 3. That's kind of sleazy, I guess, kind of, you know, like you get quote-unquote punished for not doing the side quest a game ago, but it is what it is. But what I want to talk about here is games as narratives and endings that you guys didn't like and narratives that you didn't like in the games. Is it that big a deal? Is it so important to a game that when fans have outrage, is it worth the developer going back and rewriting? Is it worth them even responding? I mean, is the narrative that big a deal? And is the ending that big a deal specifically? I mean, have you ever ran into a game where you walked away thinking, God, that's it? Like, it was a book with a bad ending. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, Rob, I know you had some thoughts too, so why don't you kick off the discussion?
Okay, well, you know, yeah, I've definitely encountered some games like that. Like I mentioned with Final Fantasy VII last week, I hate the ending to that game. You know, and there, you know, back in the NES days, of course, there were games where the ending was just, you know, credits. Total waste of your time is what it feels like. The more choice you get into it, the more personally somebody's going to take the ending, but... You know, in terms of narratives and how people react to bad endings, they are in good company because this has happened many times outside of games. The reason that Sherlock Holmes was brought back from the dead is because Arthur Conan Doyle's mother started yelling at him for killing off Sherlock Holmes. So it's not like this is a new thing.
XV, what about you?
You know, I've never really gotten into the style of games that have that immersive of a story where it becomes like watching a favorite TV show, reading a fantastic book. But on a general level, I think if you're able to produce that product that can create that feeling in people, you've done a really good job no matter how people feel about how you've ended that. And I think that's what you need to set out to accomplish, not to make everybody happy necessarily.
Interesting. So it's kind of a good thing. If you're polarizing people that much, it's a compliment no matter what, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, I mean, you've done a really good job crafting this world that people have become seriously invested in, almost frighteningly so, you know, to the point where they're screaming and demanding a better ending, mm-hmm. you know. But like I said, I don't think they should be moving to please everybody, and it doesn't sound like that's what they're really going to do. Which makes me curious how they actually intend to address any of this at all, because I don't see any option but to make additional endings that are what people are expecting out of this in the first place.
Yeah, anything less than that will seem kind of unnecessary. Almost like if you're not gonna offer a new ending, or if you're not gonna offer some significant clarification. What's the point? You know, I mean, just deal with the hate mail and kind of go on with your lives. So no matter what, even if they say they're not going to offer a new ending or change the ending, they're probably going to do something that affects how people interpret the ending. And is that any different than, like, you know, having a new ending? If you're going to give people enough tidbits to, like, change how they interpret the existing ending, it's kind of what you've done. I mean, we're talking about semantics now. It's like, yeah, you have changed the ending because you've thrown out enough, like, new tidbits to the story that people
and
start...
See, all I can think of with this whole thing is they're basically pulling a George Lucas on it, except doing it because people want it rather than just having it in their head. Hey, this would be really awesome if I did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of how I'm looking at it
right now. Yeah,
going back and rewriting Star Wars.
Totally, totally. Mm-hmm. And that brings up, like, a good point for us to touch on. So, Rob, I'll ask you this. So, video games are a little bit different as far as, like, a work of art go. They're way more interactive, obviously. They kind of draw you in. You participate in them way more than, actively participate in them way more than, like, a movie or even a book. So does that make it any different when it comes to something like this, pulling a George Lucas? Is it just as kind of strange, and in some ways it doesn't feel right for them to go back and jack with the narrative? So, like, with a movie, it's done, it's cut, it's there for all time. A game is something that kind of moves and changes, and we have DLC now, and it kind of evolves. Does that make it any more or less, you know, controversial or different for them to return to the piece of work and, like, change it?
I think in the end, the perceptions are kind of the same, especially, you know, using George Lucas as an example, because in his most recent interviews, he's basically said that Han Solo shooting first is not what you saw and not what you were supposed to see. You know, so changes like this are kind of retroactively trying to screw with the audience's perception. And, you know, once the work is out there, there's only so much you can do about that. I mean, you know, video games do change things a little bit because I played some of the Final Fantasies with new, like, added chapters at the end, but to be honest, they haven't really registered much on me as a change to the story. Once I've played through the game and enough time has passed, the story is set in my mind no matter what the developers or anybody or George Lucas would really like to tell me.
Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the same way with those of us who got to see Star Wars for the first time in the pre-97 edits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Han Solo was always going to have shot first. Jabba was never there at the base of the Millennium Falcon. You know, I mean, it just, that's not what we saw originally.
Yeah.
Totally agree. All right, good talk, guys. Well, what you're about to see are some commercials. So when we come back, we will talk about new releases for the week. And then we'll also talk about a cool price chart that 1UP.com has put on the internets. And we'll see what little tidbits into the past it offers us. This is New Soundwave.
Magnavox presents Odyssey, the electronic game of the future. Odyssey easily attaches to any brand TV, black and white or color, to create a closed-circuit electronic playground. Odyssey gives you all the exciting action of hockey and 11 other challenging play and learning games for the entire family. Odyssey, a new dimension for your television. Now at your Magnavox dealer. He's listed in the yellow pages.
It came from the third dimension with its own brain, its own voice, its own legs. There's only one problem. It needs your eyes. Virtual Boy, see it now in 3D.
If you're not playing on a 3DO system, what are you playing with? Presenting 3DO, the most advanced home gaming system in the universe. It's time to put away your toys.
Get a free John Madden football and Crash and Burn when you buy a 3DO system.
Revolutionary Neo Geo Pocket Color with 16-bit power, linkable to the Sega Dreamcast, revolving joystick, 146 color display, 6 cool styles. The graphics will blow you away. Neo Geo Pocket, way ahead of the game.
New Soundwave.
Okay, time for new releases. Hey, the first one, this one's for Rob and I, because we're a fan of JRPGs. It's Xenoblade Chronicles for the Wii. Yes, the Wii is coming out this week. It is a role-playing game which takes place on the remains of two giant titans. Kind of interesting. Like, we're essentially microbes on the skin of these two rotting husks. Doesn't that sound awesome?
Is this like the concept of the world turtle thing?
I have no idea what that is, but sure.
Where the world is on the shell of a giant
turtle. Oh, yes. In that case, yes, exactly.
I couldn't think of the actual name of it.
It is. And this is also worth noting that this is really like a throwback, kind of a love letter to the old PS1, PS2-ish JRPGs. The days when we would get like 3 a month, seemingly, just constantly berated with JRPGs. Anyway, it looks good. Metacritic score over 9. That doesn't happen too often. Everybody's raving about it. So
what you're saying is, this is a good new Wii game.
I'm saying miracles happen, yes.
I mean, like I understand each of the individual words, but this combination of them makes no sense.
Yes, it's magic. It's magic. hey, what is also magic, but in a completely different way, is Kinect Star Wars. That sounds so great.
I've seen the commercial for this. The graphics look pretty PS1 era from the gameplay footage they showed.
Okay, excellent. That's what I like.
I'm mildly alarmed.
I'm alarmed at all the YouTube videos that this will no doubt create. Star Wars kids. Yes. Oh man. I can only hope. Also coming out this week, I think officially, it got an early release on Xbox Live Arcade, but now it's officially out. I Am Alive, which is a very, very shitty survival horror game. Everybody says this is one of the worst games of the year, easily. I can attest to that. I watched a poor soul stream this and play through this game in about 90 minutes. Trey awful. Triple awful. It's
Isn't this like the second survival horror game we've gotten so far this year that was called the worst game of the year?
Yeah, well,
what was the name of that last one?
I don't know. I can look it up. But it was awful. I'm Alive is awful, too. I'm Alive is the story of a post-massive earthquake United States. The United States gets ravaged by a bunch of super earthquakes. And thus, civilization falls. The world is covered, the continent is covered in dust. So you can't see in front of you. It's like a constant dust storm. And you are trying to survive New York City. Yes, PS1 Fox. It is crappy, and it has one of the worst endings I have ever seen. I'm not gonna spoil it for you. You can look it up on YouTube and be massively disappointed, or just kind of have a giant question mark above your head. When I watched the guy, XB, I watched the guy streaming it, and when it was over and the ending happened, there was like this long pause, and then like this kind of sad, defeated voice saying, "So that's it?" And that was it. And that was it. And the credits rolled.
And the thing is, the concept as you describe it is not bad.
No.
I mean, for a survival game like that, it's better than, you know, being chased around by zombies that are there for no particular reason, or demons or whatever, you know.
Yes. Totally agree. Yeah, no.
It's not a bad idea if somebody would take that and actually be able to do something with it competently.
Okay, here's a bad idea. Titanic Mystery. Titanic Mystery for the DS. What is that? What is the mystery of the Titanic?
They built it badly.
Yes, but they built it again in this game. Yes, Titanic Mystery is a mystery game where you need to find the bomb and save the Titanic 2 and everyone on board. Because 100 years after the Titanic sank, they rebuilt an exact replica of the Titanic and dressed the crew in period pieces and set it to sail, and somebody put a bomb on it.
See, now I have to wonder, even 100 years later, how many people would actually board a ship called the Titanic 2?
That is a good question.
The other thing I want to know about this is, did they design the bomb to look like a little iceberg?
Oh man, that would have been awesome. That would have been awesome. They should have done like a 19-teens style bomb where it's just like 6 sticks of dynamite and an alarm
clock.
Yes, that's right. Great minds think alike. Hey, before we get to the random hypothetical real quick, 1UP.com is doing a big send-up to the 90s gaming, and they put a big price comparison chart online. You can see it on your screen now. I've repurposed it for new Soundwave. So there's some interesting tidbits in here. Once again, we know that we used to pay way more for video games than we do now. So we've got little samplings like Sonic. So Sonic was $50, $49.99 in 1992. When you adjust that to today's dollars, that is over $80 for Sonic the Hedgehog. Contrast that with now, Sonic Generations is still $50, just like the first Sonic. The only difference is one was not pure crap. Final Fantasy II.
We're still looking forward to Sonic Generations 2.
And Sonic Generations, the full name for Sonic Generations is Sonic Generations Episode 1. Episode 2 comes out in a couple months. Yeah, that's right. It keeps on coming. Final Fantasy II was $70 in 1992. That is over $113 in today's dollars. By contrast, 13-2, which came out like a month and a half ago, it was $60. So it was actually cheaper than Final Fantasy II in its current dollars. Let's see here. Last one that I'll point out. Let's see. What do I want? How about another Final Fantasy game? Final Fantasy V, the Japanese version. That was $88. That is almost $150 in today's dollars. Can you imagine paying almost $150 for a game?
Just for good measure, give us a Mario game off there at
random. Sure. So let's see here. Do we have a Mario game on here? I don't think they have a Mario game on here.
Then they have failed in their job.
Yes, they have failed. Well, of course, most Mario games were $40 to $50-ish. So, I mean, that equates to like $80 or $90 in today's dollars. So, yeah. Man. Inflation. What are you going to do? Time. For the random hypothetical. All right, guys. The random hypothetical is this week sponsored by no one. So we're still accepting applications for sponsors. Please, everyone, write, call your congressman, email me at john@tfradio.net if you want to sponsor the random hypothetical. I don't think the sale pitch is going to work, but it's worth a try. You got to ask. Okay, guys. So now that we are down a man, Peter's on vacation. He is off on a beach somewhere, perhaps, or gambling in the back streets of Hong Kong. I don't know how he likes to spend his time, but he's going to be gone for a couple weeks. I'm not judging either. So, you know, if he's killing a hooker in Shanghai, or if he's, you know, cleaning up oil-covered ducks on a reef somewhere, you know what I mean, like working for Greenpeace, one or the other, I don't judge. They're both noble pursuits. Killing hookers, saving baby seals, same thing, same difference. He will not be participating in another awesome random hypothetical, and here it is, guys. You must choose knees or elbows, one or the other. You're going to lose the other. You're going to keep the other. So to you guys, which is the most vital joint, set of joints for you, knees or elbows? XV.
Elbows, easy.
Yeah.
Elbows.
Wow! How about that? Oh my gosh, that's the fastest random hypothetical ever. I'm almost scared to ask why. This is so clear.
Okay, first, you can walk without knees. It's not easy or comfortable, but you can still do it.
Okay.
Plus, there's also, you know, the wheelchair option, etc. You can get around having no knees, but if you don't have elbows, your arm is always going to be about 2.5 feet from your face.
Good, nice demonstration, yes. Okay, very good. Very good. Wow. So, Rob, do you agree? Is this your reasoning as well?
Yeah, I agree completely. That, you know, plus, I'm... You can probably tell by looking, I'm not a particularly physically active person. My life would be much harder without the elbows than it would the knees.
Okay. Well, you guys have made an argument that I cannot counter. So I'll take the elbows too, man. See, this is why everybody needs to watch New Soundwave and pay attention to the random hypothetical, because we've saved everyone.
Because when someone presents you with the option to lose either your knees or your elbows, you need to know the correct answer.
Yes, and quickly. And quickly, and now you do. And now we're going to close out the show. So thanks, guys, for another good show for the week of April Fools. Until next week, everybody keep gaming, and we'll see you around.
2-1-0. Game over.
I love the Power Glove. It's so bad.
He touched my breath!
This has been New Sound Wave. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Check out all our videos at tfvideo.net. New Soundwave is a Radio Free Cybertron production.